Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Habeas and Facts, Post-Argument Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 4th, 2009, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Wood v. Allen. The issue in this case is how to reconcile various provisions of the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, the AEDPA, regarding state court findings of fact challenged on habeas. To discuss the case, we have Assistant U.S. Attorney Todd F. Bronstein. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. In addition, Mr. Bronstein is speaking only on behalf of himself and not on behalf of the Department of Justice. And now, Mr. Bronstein.
Hello, my name is Todd Bronstein. I am an Assistant United States Attorney in Boston, though this podcast is being presented in my personal capacity and does not necessarily represent the views of the Department of Justice. Last Wednesday, November 4th, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Wood v. Allen, a death penalty case concerning the deference owed to state courts by federal courts conducting habeas review. The facts of the case are as follows. On September 1, 1993, petitioner Holly Wood brutally killed Ruby Lois Gosha, his former girlfriend and the mother of his child. On the night of the murder, Wood snuck into Gosha's bedroom with a 12-gauge shotgun and shot her in the head and face. She died before the ambulance could come take her to the hospital. Wood was charged in Alabama with capital murder during a first-degree burglary. Wood's court-appointed counsel obtained a psychological evaluation of him. This examination, performed by Dr. Carl Kirkland, concluded that Wood was functioning, at most, in the borderline range of intellectual functioning. However, Dr. Kirkland also found that Wood had a normal thought process, that his thinking was goal-directed and logical, that he had a complete memory of his behavior at the time of the murder, and that there was no mental disorder that would detract from his ability to appreciate the criminality of his murder of Gosha. Wood's team did not seek another mental health evaluation. Wood proceeded to trial, and the jury convicted him of capital murder. In the sentencing phase, Wood's attorneys did not present Dr. Kirkland's conclusions about Wood's impaired mental functioning as a possible mitigating factor. The jury voted 10-2 to recommend the death penalty, and the judge ultimately accepted that recommendation. Wood's conviction and sentence were affirmed on appeal, and in 1999, Wood sought post-conviction review in Alabama's state courts. Wood argued there that his attorneys had rendered ineffective assistance at the penalty phase of the trial by failing to investigate and present evidence of his mental impairments. The court rejected this claim. The court found that Wood's lawyers had reviewed Dr. Kirkland's report, determined that nothing in the report merited further investigation, and decided that calling Dr. Kirkland to testify was not in Wood's best interest. The court concluded that reasonable counsel could have decided against seeking another mental health evaluation in order to pursue other more promising avenues, such as the ones that Wood's counsel did present. Wood then sought federal habeas relief. The district court granted his ineffective assistance claim, but a divided panel of the 11th Circuit reversed. The Supreme Court granted certiorari to consider two questions under 28 United States Code Section 2254. The first is whether the Alabama State Court's rejection of Wood's ineffective assistance claim was based on a, quote, unreasonable determination of the facts, close quote, under 28 U.S.C. 2254 D2, that Wood's counsel had consciously chosen to end their mental health investigation with the Kirkland report and not to present any evidence in the report to the penalty phase jury. The second question that the court granted certiorari to consider is a technical but important question of statutory construction concerning the relationship between two provisions of federal law governing the deference federal courts owe to state court factual determinations. Section 2254 D2, already mentioned, provides that habeas relief shall not be granted unless the state court rendered a decision that was, quote, based on an unreasonable determination of the facts in light of the evidence presented in the state court proceeding, close quote. Meanwhile, Section 2254 E1 provides that in federal habeas proceedings, a state court's determination of a factual issue is presumptively correct with the petitioner required to rebut by clear and convincing evidence. The question is how to reconcile these provisions that seemingly deal with the same issue. Wood argued that the 2254E1 presumption does not apply when the habeas petitioner seeks relief based entirely on the state record, as Wood did in his case. It is only when the petitioner seeks to challenge a state court's factual findings using evidence that was not part of the state court record that the E1 presumption comes into play, according to Wood. In defense of this argument, Wood points to the structure of the statute, including the placement of 2254E1 and 2254D2 in different subsections. In addition, he notes that there are key differences in language between the two provisions. 2254E1 specifies that a state court determination of a factual issue is presumed to be, quote, correct, and speaks of a habeas petitioner's obligation to rebut the presumption of, quote, correctness. By contrast, Section 2254D2 requires an assessment of whether a state court decision was based on a, quote, unreasonable determination of the facts. In other words, not whether the facts are correct. Wood argues that if Congress had wanted the E1 burden of proof to govern the D2 standard of reasonableness, it presumably would have framed E1 in terms of rebutting a presumption of reasonableness rather than a presumption of correctness. By contrast, the respondents argue that the 2254E1 presumption applies in all federal habeas proceedings, regardless of whether extrinsic evidence comes into play. The respondents point to the seemingly unambiguous plain language of 2254E1, which states that the presumption applies, quote, in a proceeding instituted by an application for a writ of habeas corpus by a person in custody pursuant to a judgment of a state court, close quote. In other words, Congress stated that the presumption should apply in all proceedings in which a 2254 habeas petition is filed, not only those in cases involving extrinsic evidence. In addition, the respondents point to an earlier version of Section 2254 that included a pre-presumption review of the state court record. However, Congress repealed this threshold review with the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. The respondents argue that Wood is simply trying to resurrect pre-presumption review. Oral argument last Wednesday focused primarily on the relationship between D2 and E1. Justices Scalia and Alito agreed with the state's position, each explicitly stating that there was no conflict between the two provisions. They emphasized that E1 applies to subsidiary factual findings, while D2 applies to whether the overall decision was based on an unreasonable determination of the facts. However, most of the justices, including Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy, seemed to agree that there was tension between the two provisions, though in many cases it was unclear how the justices would resolve this tension. Justice Kennedy in particular lamented how difficult it would be to provide the lower courts with guidance on this issue. The justice who seemed the most sympathetic to Wood's position was Justice Breyer. He conceded that the Scalia-Alito approach was a possible way of looking at the statute, but seemed concerned that this interpretation would lead to widespread confusion about what constitutes subsidiary facts. It will be interesting to see how the court ultimately addresses these questions when it announces its decision in a few months. This has been Todd Braunstein. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.